From the NBC University Theater, Mr. Herbert Marshall in Goodbye, Mr. Chips by James Hilton. We bring you one of modern literature's most gentle stories, James Hilton's tender biography of an English schoolmaster, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, as adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. As our star, as Mr. Chips himself, we are proud to present one of the modern theater's most urbane actors, Mr. Herbert Marshall. At intermission, you will hear a recorded commentary on Mr. Chips and other writings of James Hilton by Hugh J. Coleridge Mackinnis. Here now, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, starring Herbert Marshall.
By 1933, he was as much a part of Brookfield School as its ancient elms or its quadrangle of 18th century buildings. A typical bit of cherished English tradition. His real name was Chipping, but for more than 50 years, masters and students alike had referred to him simply as Mr. Chips. And though he was now 85 and had been retired for many years, he made a special point of getting to know all the new boys and having them to tea with him during their first term. With a walnut cake, crumpets soaked in butter, and tea mixed carefully from various caddies, his guests found the ceremony highly impressive and enjoyable.
Perhaps you'd like another crumpet, Walton.
Oh, no, thank you, sir. I've had quite enough, sir.
Well, now that you've said what politeness requires, do have another, as you really would like to.
Thanks awfully, sir. They are a treat.
Branksome.
Yes, sir?
Don't recall that name. Are you the first of your family to attend Brookfield, eh?
My uncle was here, sir. My mother's brother. His name is Major Collingwood.
Collingwood, of course.
You remember him, sir?
Yes, indeed. Collingwood was here in 1902, I think it was.
Yes, that would be my uncle, sir.
Red-haired he was, with a real crop of freckles. I once thrashed him for climbing onto the gymnasium roof to get a ball out of the gutter.
You thrashed Uncle Collingwood, sir?
Certainly I did. Might have broken his neck, the young fool.
Oh, I say, sir, that is good.
Have you been to the new cinema, sir?
Cinema? No, I have not.
I went with my people the other day. Quite a grand fair for a small place like Brookfield. They've got a Wurlitzer.
And what on earth is a Wurlitzer?
It's an organ, sir, a cinema organ.
Dear me, I've seen the name on the boards, but I always imagined it must be some kind of a sausage. Mm. 5 o'clock already. Well, it's been very delightful meeting you like this. I'm sorry you can't stay longer. And, Wilson, why don't you just take that last crumpet with you?
Because Mr. Chips was getting on in years, Dr. Merivale would stop by for a visit and a glass of sherry every fortnight or so.
My dear fellow, you're fitter than I am. You're past the age when people get these horrible diseases. You're one of the lucky ones who are going to die a really natural death.
Well.
Oh, that is, of course, if you die at all. You're such a remarkable old boy that one never knows.
Oh, is that so, eh?
You're feeling pretty hearty, aren't you, Chips?
Oh, yes, no complaints except Anno Domini. Anno Domini. But that's the most fatal complaint of all in the end.
But you have many annos yet, my dear fellow. Just keep indoors this weather. There's a lot of flu about. I must say, I wish I could have your life for a day or two.
His life. And what a life it had been. He leafed through the years as one turns the pages of a familiar book. The first time that he'd stood on big hall steps to take call over. The long school list curling over a board. And each boy as he passed speaking his own name to be verified and ticked off the sheets.
Barnard.
Bassenthwaite.
Battersby.
Beckles.
Bedford.
Bennett.
Bentley.
Best.
That was in 1870. Chips was only 22 and feeling quite at the mercy of these young ruffians. He remembered vividly his interview with old Weatherby, Brookfield's head.
Yes, Mr. Chipping.
I was told you wished to see me, Mr. Weatherby.
Quite right, I did. Now, sit down. No, come, sit down, Mr. Chipping.
Yes, sir, yes.
According to your records, you spent a year teaching at Melbury before you came here.
Yes, sir, and I do much prefer Brookfield to Melbury.
I gather that disciplining the students was not always your strong point at Melbury.
Oh, well, to be quite truthful, sir, they were a rather rowdy group at times.
Well, they were only being boys, Mr. Chipping, and the ones here at Brookfield are no different if not kept in hand. Perhaps you've learnt that already,
Oh, well, sir, this morning, some young chap did rather upset the books on my desk.
They'll play tricks on you if they can, sir. You must take a firm hand from the beginning. That's the secret of it.
Yes, sir.
Tonight you will take prep for the first time.
Oh, yes, sir.
And I can see you're not looking forward to it. And of course they'll be ready to pounce on you. But if you show them you'll take no nonsense, they'll not give any. And like you, a lot better for your firmness.
I shall do my best, sir.
Oh, that's all we ask. And my best wishes for your first prep.
That's a new one.
Look how pink his face is. What's his name again?
Chipping. Mr. Chipping.
Mr. Chipping. Mr. Chips.
That's jolly.
Mr. Chips. I'll bet we can put a lot over on him.
I'll drop the lid of my desk. Pretend to be studying.
You there in the fifth row. You with the red hair. What's your name?
Carly, sir.
Very well, Carly. You have 100 lines.
But why, sir?
Complete silence is demanded during prep. Desk lids can be rather an annoyance.
But it was quite an accident, sir. I was trying to get a pen quill from my
Since
desk.
Since you have so much time for explanations, Carly, that will be 200 lines. Perhaps the rest of you would like to join Carly in a similar task.
No trouble at all after that. He had won his first round. In his early 20s, Chips had been as ambitious as most other young men at such an age. His dream was to get a headship eventually, or at any rate a senior mastership. And every time there was an opening for a higher position at Brookfield, he applied assiduously for the post. But somehow it was always granted to another. That particular evening so marked in his memory occurred after he'd been at the school about a decade. It was toward dusk. And Chips was sitting in a small parlor in one of those large chairs that completely hide the occupants from view when two other masters entered the room. They thought they were quite alone.
Well, congratulations, old man.
Thanks, Anderson.
You're now a senior master.
Thanks, Anderson.
Well, of course you knew you'd get it.
Not definitely.
Well, but you certainly had no serious competition.
Chips had put in for the post.
Chips? Oh, Chips is the perennial applier and is perennially disappointing.
He must be competent or they wouldn't keep him on.
Oh, he's good for his job. He's a nice fellow, Chips, but run-of-the-mill, definitely run-of-the-mill.
It was some time after the masters left that Chips got up from the wing-back chair. And if there had been anyone about who cared enough to observe him, they would have noticed a quiet but sad resignation in his eyes. He never tried for another promotion.
Danbury.
But as time went on, the possibility of staying where he was began to fill a comfortable niche in his mind.
Gary.
At 40, he was rooted, settled, and quite happy at Brookfield. By the time he was 48, he felt he could predict his future with present assurance. But that summer, during a vacation in the mountains, a very unexpected thing occurred. Least expected by Mr. Chips.
Hello there!
That sounded like someone calling.
Hello!
Dear me, it is a young woman calling.
Can you hear me down there?
I can see her now. Why, she's quite far out on that ledge. Must be in some sort of trouble.
Hello!
Don't worry, I'm coming. Now just stay where you are. Don't move. Why do these modern young women do such reckless things? Mountain climbing, of all things. Difficult enough for me to scale this rock. Ooh! Now what have we? Turn my ankle. Well, I got to help her, no matter what. Why don't women stay where they belong?
Hello there.
Hello. I'll be there in just a moment. Just...
Here, take my hand. I can help you over that last crag.
Huh? Well, oh, very well.
Come along. Take my hand.
All right.
Now, there you are.
Yes. Oh. Here I am. I'm afraid I'm not too much help to you now, really. I seem to have turned my ankle quite a bit.
Oh, I'm so dreadfully sorry.
However, I shall do my utmost to assist you.
I beg your pardon.
I heard you calling for help. That's the reason.
I wondered what you meant about helping me.
I'm afraid I don't quite understand the cause of your laughter.
Oh, but I wasn't calling for help at all. I was only waving to some friends of mine down in the valley.
Oh, I see.
Well, I'm so very sorry about your ankle, and now I shall have to rescue you.
No, nonsense, not at all. I shall manage quite well.
Oh, but you won't at all.
I'll be quite all right.
Oh, there, you see now. You really can't get down Great Gable alone with such a sprain.
You seem to know the mountain rather well.
Oh, yes, I'm quite experienced in climbing.
You don't say.
And my dear Mr...
Chipping.
And my name is Catherine Bridges. Now, Mr. Chipping, just put your arm around my shoulder and we'll manage quite nicely. You know, you must have that ankle attended to without delay.
Yes, I suppose you're right. Very well, then. I must say, Miss Bridges, that we're rather strange opinion of the humorous. I fail to see why a sprained ankle should be the cause of such mirth.
Oh, I didn't mean to be rude, sir. But from the expression on your face, I fancy your ankle is not causing you nearly so much pain as your manly pride. Oh, do forgive me, Mr. Chipping. Hello there.
Oh, Miss Bridges, I must say, my dear young lady, I didn't expect to see you standing outside my window. How did you get here?
On my bicycle.
Your bicycle?
Oh, Mr. Chipping, have I shocked you again by admitting that I cycle?
I suppose you're one of the new women one hears so much about these days.
Yes, I suppose I really must be. But I like Bernard Shaw and Ibsen.
Oh.
And I think women should be allowed in the universities and even have the vote.
Well, I...
And now I suppose I may be completely bold and ask if I can come inside and visit you for a while.
I'm sorry. Yes, please, won't you? Just come in.
I should be very happy to... Oh, don't try to get up, Mr. Chipping. I see the door. And hello again.
How do you do? Won't you sit down?
Yes, thank you.
How did you happen to pass by this way, Miss Bridges?
I came purposely, just to see you, Mr. Chipping.
Not really.
Certainly. I was the cause of your accident, so now I must make sure that you recover.
Well, it's very kind of you, but I imagine there are so many other things you'd rather be doing than visiting a man old enough to be your father.
What sort of other things, Mr. Chipping?
Well, just being with the young lady you're traveling with.
Oh, but she's left already.
What's that?
Yes, she left this morning.
But why did you stay?
I told you. I must look after you until you're quite all right again.
Oh, dear me.
So you see, I'm afraid you'll just have to put up with my visits, Mr. Chipping. But you're really doing famously. You know you'll soon be able to walk without the cane.
Yes, possibly.
Let's sit here on the stone wall.
All right.
And now, do tell me more about Brookfield, Mr. Chipping.
Well, there's not much to tell, Miss Bridges.
Of course there is. Schoolmastering's so important, don't you think? To be influencing those who are going to grow up and matter in the world.
Well, I do my best. That's all anyone can do in any job.
Yes, of course. I do love it when you say simple things like that.
Do you? I can't help but think I bore you, Miss Bridges.
I've never been less bored in my life.
Oh? And I find myself quite looking forward to the sight of your shocking bicycle.
You do have a delightful humor, you know.
Oh.
Do you share it with your students, or are you a terribly strict master?
Well, they're a pack of ruffians. One has to use discipline.
Oh, certainly. I suppose they're all frightened to death of you and say, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, Mr. Chipping. And
to be quite truthful, they generally refer to me as Mr. Chips.
Oh, how wonderful. Why, it's a perfect name. Of course, I shall call you Chips, too, if I may.
The names never sounded quite so nice.
Well, I must admit you're as good as new again, Chips.
Yes, I suppose I am. Pity.
Why?
It's been such an enjoyable inconvenience. You'll be leaving soon?
Yes. And you?
I have a month yet before the fall term.
I know you'll be happy to return to Brookfield and to your important work, Chips.
Oh, Kathy, it's not important work. I've been at Brookfield for 25 years, and I've risen no higher than a housemaster, and shall, I'm sure, rise no higher. I'm really uncommonly mediocre. Well, now what are you laughing at?
It's no use. You're trying to discourage me, Chips. Modern women, hopelessly in love, are very determined people.
Kathy.
And I'm in love with you, because you are what you are. I wouldn't have you one speck different.
Oh, but Kathy. Oh, Kathy, do you... I mean... Would you...
Yes.
Will you marry me, Kathy?
Yes, Chips, dear.
Kathy.
Oh, we'll be married before the fall term.
Yes, yes.
Oh, dear, we've so many things to do, to attend to. I must get back to my hotel and pack it, and you must get ready to leave.
Yes, the sooner the better. Oh, I still find it difficult to believe.
Perhaps if I leave you now, you'll realize it more, dear. My, this is an occasion, you know. I feel rather like a new boy beginning his first term with you. Shall I call you sir, or would Mr. Chips be the right thing? Yes, Mr. Chips, I think. Goodbye, then. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
There followed then a time of such happiness that Chips, remembering it long afterward, hardly believed it could ever have happened before or since in the world. His marriage was a triumphant success. Kathy conquered Brookfield as she had conquered Chips.
Oh, no, Kathy, I don't think so.
But they do, Chips, dear, they do. They're really quite fond of you. Is it against Brookfield and tradition for boys to like their masters?
Well, no, but I've never cut much of a figure with them.
All the same, they are fond of you. I can tell. And, Chips, I do wish you'd let them enjoy some of your delightful humor.
How's that, my dear? What do you mean?
Well, you're always thinking of so many clever little jokes and sayings. It's a shame not to share them with your students.
Oh, Kathy, you overrate
my... No, Chips, no, I'm right in this. I know I am. You are clever in your own sweet, darling way. And if you make little jokes in class to bring out some point in the lesson, why the boys would learn much faster.
Well...
Will you try it once, Chips, dear? Just once. And see if I'm not right.
Perhaps I shall. Yeah, well, perhaps I shall. And now let us consider some of the laws of ancient Rome. There was... Collie.
Yes, sir?
Are you whispering to your neighbor, Collie?
Well, sir, I...
Yes or no?
Yes, sir.
Collie, your father was the first boy I ever punished when I came here 25 years ago. He deserved it then, and you deserve it now, 100 lines. Among the Roman laws, there was one called the Lex Canulaia. Anyone of you ever heard of the Lex Canulaia? Well, it was the law that permitted patricians to marry plebeians. So, in those days, you see, if Miss Plebs wanted Mr. Patrician to marry her, and he said he couldn't, she probably replied, "Oh, yes, you can, you liar."
Yes, you can, you liar.
Can, you liar. Oh, that's good.
That's very good, sir.
Now came love, the sudden love of boys for a man who was kind without being soft, who understood them well enough but not too much, and whose private happiness linked them with their own. This time was a warm and vivid patch in his life, casting a radiance that glowed in a thousand recollections. Catherine scampering along the stone corridors beside him, or taking part in the Mozart trio, Catherine furred and muffed for the December house matches, Catherine at the garden party. And there was always in his mind that spring day in 98.
Mr. Chipping? Oh, I say, sir. Mr. Chipping?
What?
Well, please, sir, we have a letter for you.
Oh.
It must be rather important, sir.
What?
I say, it might be rather important, sir. Aren't you going to open it?
Oh. Oh, yes, sir. Well, there's nothing written here. Only a blank piece of paper.
April Fool's, sir.
It's April Fool's Day, sir.
Oh, we really got you in that one, sir.
Yes.
I say, sir, you aren't angry, are you, sir?
Strange, eh?
Rather. The old chap really enjoys a good joke.
Oh, fellas, was that Mr. Chips you were talking to?
Why, yes.
Terrible, that, wasn't it?
What?
I say, hadn't you heard? His wife and new baby both died this morning.
From Hollywood, the NBC University Theater is bringing you Herbert Marshall in a radio version of James Hilton's Goodbye, Mr. Chips. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC University Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentator, the noted English lecturer and author, Hugh J. Coleridge Macronis.
The boarding schools for boys of 12 to 18 in England, which native humor calls public schools because they are essentially private, are often foundations of age and always of tradition. They emphasize sound scholarship, hard work, and fair play, and aim at building character through responsible leadership. Mr. Hilton's imaginary Brookfield, though it lacks the size and prestige of Winchester, Eton, or Rugby, is true to type and dates from the age of Elizabeth. Such institutions need personal continuity, and men like Mr. Chips, who insensibly take root in the fabric of a school's best traditions, who have personalities and develop into characters and institutions themselves, men kind, friendly, utterly honest, and completely devoted to the place they serve, are invaluable and all too rare. When two of his colleagues dismissed him as a nice fellow but run-of-the-mill, they were only a little right. Mr. Chips is a common man, if you will, even as you or I or Robinson Crusoe, but far from a no-account one. He is not one of those whom John Masefield calls the periwig charioteers. He was not inflated by notions of his own importance. Indeed, he was almost too modest and too loyal to complain of a young headmaster so ignorant that he referred to the world's masterpieces of literature as dead languages. But he has his greatness, for he loved his vocation and not only found his true niche in life, but filled it with distinction. His work was consistently quiet and unobtrusive. As he himself remarked, you cannot judge a thing's importance by the noise it makes. And his reward was not the hero worship inspired by spectacular achievement, but the lasting affection and gratitude of generations of Brookfield boys and men. Youth is eagerly teachable if older heads know how to share their experience, and Mr. Chips possessed two gifts that mark the born teacher: a sympathetic understanding of his pupils and the ability to impart high standards without priggishness or preaching. Apart from the moving sincerity with which it is told, I like this little story because against a background sketch of English school life as it was before and through the two world wars and still is, it gives a credible portrait of simple goodness. And that, though all too seldom front page news, is what makes this world go round and matters most to us all.
Thank you, Mr. Mackinnis. Our radio version of Goodbye, Mr. Chips, starring Herbert Marshall, will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
Different. Everyone noticed it. Just as marriage had added something, so did bereavement. Kathy had bequeathed him a new calmness and poise. During the years that followed, he won an uncharted no man's land of privilege, the right to those gentle eccentricities that so often attach themselves to schoolmasters and parsons. There was only one man at Brookfield who disapproved of Chips, but unfortunately this man was Ralston, the headmaster. That particular day in 1908 was an oft-turned page in his memory. It began with a talk between Chips and his friend Max Stafel, the German professor.
No, Chips, I tell you, I don't like it, your being sent such a formal summons to see Ralston.
Oh, Ralston is a formal and efficient man, Max.
And you will now proceed to tell me how much he has done for Brookfield, I suppose.
In fact, you cannot deny yourself, my dear fellow. He's ambitious, Ralston, a live wire. A fine power transmitter.
Mm, and you have to beware of him.
Oh, Max, you are a complete cynic.
And you, Chips, are a hypocrite unless you admit that you like him no more than I do.
Well, no, I don't. But you see, Max, I'm 30 years older than you are. In the next 30 years, you'll get more tolerant of those you dislike, particularly when it's a mutual proposition. For Ralston doesn't like me either.
But that's what's so serious, Chips, that he doesn't like you.
Why so, eh?
Well, what happened to the other masters he had it in for, huh?
They're no longer with us.
And that does not worry you?
It doesn't in the least, my boy. I'm rather like that photograph of old Mrs. Brule in the tuck shop. Not much of an asset, but so much a permanent fixture, I'm rather protected from removal.
I would like to believe you, Chips. Well, I certainly hope I am wrong.
And of course you are, my dear Stafel. Well, I must not keep our thinking machine waiting. See you after prep, old fellow.
Hopewell.
Hopkins.
Hornblower.
Houseman.
Hubert Primus.
Hubert Secundus.
Huntington.
Huntley.
You wanted to see me at four, sir?
Yes, I did, Mr. Chipping. Though it is now 10 minutes past four.
Oh, dear me, yes. The time does rather fly by.
Yes, yes, it does at that. How long is it you've been at Brookfield now? 38 years?
Precisely, yes.
Yes, yes. A long time. Tell me, Mr. Chipping, have you ever thought of retiring?
No. No, I can't say that I have thought much about it.
Well, Mr. Chipping, the suggestion is there for you to consider. The governors would, of course, agree to your being adequately pensioned.
But I don't want to retire. I don't need to consider it.
Nevertheless, I suggest that you do.
I don't see why I should.
In that case, things are going to be a little difficult.
Difficult? Why difficult?
You force me to use plain words, Mr. Chipping. For some time past, you haven't been pulling your weight here.
Pulling my weight, I mean.
Your methods of teaching are slack and old-fashioned. Your personal habits are slovenly. And you ignore my instructions in a way which in a younger man I should regard as rank insubordination.
But you said slovenly.
Yes. Look at the gown you're wearing.
What's wrong with it?
Why, it's practically in tatters. That gown of yours is a subject of continual amusement throughout the school.
I know, but I never thought it a very regrettable matter. You also said something about insubordination.
I said in a young man I should have regarded it as that. In your case, it's probably a mixture of slackness and obstinacy.
Oh.
Now, this question of Latin pronunciation, for instance. I think I told you years ago that I wanted the new style used throughout the school.
Oh, that? Well, I admit that I don't agree with the new pronunciation. I never did. A lot of nonsense, in my opinion, making boys say Cicero at school when for the rest of their lives they'll say Cicero, if they ever say it at all. And instead of Vichism, heaven bless my soul, you make them say we kiss him.
Well, there you are, Mr. Chipping. That's just an example of what I complain of. You hold one opinion, and I hold another. And since you decline to give way, there can't very well be any alternative. I understand, Mr. Chipping, that your Latin and Greek lessons are exactly the same as they were when I began here 10 years ago.
For that matter, they are the same as when your predecessor, Mr. Meldrum, came here. We began here, Mr. Meldrum and I, in 1870. And it was Mr. Meldrum's predecessor, Mr. Weatherby, who first approved my syllabus. "You'll take the Cicero for the fourth form," he said to me. Cicero, too, not Cicero.
Very interesting, Mr. Chipping. But times are changing, whether you realize it or not.
Oh, I realize it. I notice quite a few changes all about me.
Well, you do not act in keeping with them.
Well, I know you're a busy man, Mr. Ralston. I shan't take any more of your time. But I don't intend to resign, and you can do what you like about it. Good day, sir. Walby, what were you doing here?
I was just passing by, sir. Just passing by.
Well, see that you keep on passing right out to call over.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chipping.
Jonathan.
Jordan.
Joyce.
Calland.
Kane.
Keats.
Keesby Primus.
Keesby Secundus.
Kensington.
Keniston.
Kevis.
Kingsley.
Kingsley.
And I could hear everything old Ralston said.
He can't make Chips resign.
He said Chips had to resign.
I'm going to write to my father. He knows one of the governors.
And I'll write to my people.
You know Chips. He won't lift a finger to help himself. We'll have to rally round him.
If Ralston sacks Chips, we'll have a public riot. What say?
I'm for it. We'll show Ralston a thing or two.
A public riot. That's the thing, all right.
Yes.
A public riot.
That's what we're talking about.
Chips. Chips.
Oh, that you, Max?
Sir John Rivers is here to see you.
Ah, Rivers, a fine fellow. Not a very brilliant boy in class. I remember he could never master his verbs.
But he just now so happens to be the chairman of the governors of Brookfield, in case you have forgotten, Chips. And he has come especially down to see you, he says.
Oh? Oh, to see me?
Well, at last. Yes.
That may mean bad news, Max.
You said I was a cynic, Chips.
Well, I'll go out to him.
But, Chips, perhaps just for this once, you take my gown. Yours is a bit...
No, Max. If I'm going to hear bad news, I'd feel better hearing it in my natural surroundings.
It's pleasant to walk around Brookfield on a spring morning, Chips.
Yes. Brookfield is pleasant at any time.
Things been going about the same for you?
Oh, about the same, I should say.
Chips, old boy, I hear you've been having the deuce of a row with Ralston.
Well...
I'm sorry to hear about it for your sake, but I want you to know that the governors are with you to a man.
Eh?
We don't like the fellow a great deal. Very clever and all that, but a bit too clever if you ask me. If he starts chucking his weight about with you, tell him very politely to go to blazes. The governors don't want you to resign.
No.
Of course not, my dear fellow. You can stay here till you're 100 if you feel like it. Indeed, it's our hope that you will.
I... Bless me, Sir John, I think I've got a bit of soot in my eye.
Livingston.
Looking back upon that scene,
Mansfield Brown,
Chips could find it in his heart to feel a little sorry for Ralston, who left soon after the incident to better himself. In 1913, he had bronchitis and was off duty for nearly the whole of the winter term. And so he decided to resign that summer when he was 65. He would take rooms across the road with the excellent Mrs. Wickett, who had once been linen room maid. At that final end-of-term dinner in July, Chips received a check, a desk, and a clock, and he made a speech.
I wish to thank the captain of the school for his very nice introduction, but I feel he was guilty of exaggeration in speaking of my services to Brookfield. But then he comes of an exaggerating family. I remember once having to thrash his father for it. I gave him 1 mark for a Latin translation, and he exaggerated the 1 into a 7. I have been at Brookfield for 42 years. I've been very happy here. It has been my life. I remember lots of changes at Brookfield. I remember the first bicycle. I remember when we used to have a member of the domestic staff called a lamp boy, who did nothing else but clean and trim the lamps throughout the school. I remember when 2/3 of the school went down with German measles and Big Hall was turned into a hospital ward. I remember the great bonfire we had on Mafeking night. It was lit too near the pavilion, and we had to send for the fire brigade to put it out. And the firemen were having their own celebrations, and most of them were in a regrettable condition. In fact, I remember so much that I often think I ought to write a book. Now, what should I call it? Memories of Rod and Lines, eh? Well, perhaps I shall write it someday. But I'd rather tell you about it, really. Chiefly I remember all your faces. I never forget them. I have thousands of faces in my mind. The faces of boys. Perhaps someday you'll see me somewhere and I shan't recognize you and you'll say to yourself, the old boy doesn't remember me. But I do remember you as you are now. That's the point. In my mind, you never grow up at all. Sometimes, for instance, when people talk to me about our respected chairman of the governors, I think to myself, ah, yes, a jolly little chap with hair that sticks up on top. And absolutely no idea whatever about the difference between a gerund and a gerundif. Well, I mustn't go on all night. Think of me sometimes, as I shall certainly think of you.
That August, Chips went for a visit to Wiesbaden, where he lodged at the home of the German master at Brookfield, Herr Max Stafel, with whom he had become friendly. And in September, when the term began, Chips returned and took up residence at Mrs. Wickett's. He had all the new boys to tea. He took on the preparation and editing of a new Brookfeldian directory. He wrote occasional articles, full of jokes and that in quotations, for the Brookfield Terminal magazine. And so the time went until the calendar showed 1914. And even then, spirits in England and at Brookfield were high.
What's the news from the fatherland, Max?
Oh, nothing that we don't hear right in England. There is talk of war, of course.
But it's not serious.
I think not myself, Chips.
They say there's trouble between Austria and Serbia.
Ah, it won't come to anything.
Oh, well, well.
I'm going to visit my family for the summer. I think I told you, Chips.
Yes, yes, you did mention it, yes. Get a bit of rest for yourself. You know, you have to be fit for the new term. I hear we're getting some regular rascals.
Yeah, I will. And you take care of yourself, too. Well, I must finish my packing. I'll see you soon.
Hmm? Oh, yes.
Auf Wiedersehen, Chips.
Auf Wiedersehen, Max.
The war years. Students and masters alike leaving for the front. And every Sunday night in chapel, Chatteris the head reading out the names of old boys killed together with short biographies. Was always very moving. The Chips in the back pew under the gallery thought,
oh, they're only names to him. He doesn't see their faces as I do. All of their smiling, boyish faces.
...1916, the Battle of the Somme. 23 names read out one Sunday evening. Toward the close of that catastrophic July, Chatteris paid a call on Chips one afternoon at Mrs. Wickett's.
You look a bit tired, I must say. But I know you're overworked.
Well, to tell you the truth, Chippy, I'm not having too easy a time here. I'm 39, you know, and unmarried, and lots of people think I'm a slacker for not being at the front.
Oh, no.
Oh, I know they do. But it so happens I'm diabetic, and I couldn't pass the blindest eye exam.
I'm very sorry to hear this. I hadn't known.
Well, I didn't come for sympathy, Chipping. But, well, you see how it is. I have to work till midnight every night and get cold shoulders as a slacker on top of everything. I can't stand it much longer. If things don't improve next term, I shall have a breakdown.
I do sympathize with you.
Well, I hoped you would. And, well, that brings me to what I came here to ask you. Briefly, my suggestion is that if you felt equal to it and would care to, how about coming back for a while? You needn't take anything strenuously, just as you choose. What I'd like you for is not for the actual work you do, but for your help in other ways, in just belonging. You'd help to hold things together if there were any danger of them flying to bits. And perhaps there is that danger. Well, Mr. Chipping?
I'll come. Oh, yes, I'll come.
Rawlings.
He was a grand success altogether.
Which is in second.
And in some strange way, he did help things.
Roland.
And then in the winter of 17, Chatteris fell ill and died. And Chips received another visit from Sir John Rivers.
Now that Chatteris has gone, Chips, Brookfield is in need of a new headmaster.
Yes.
It isn't a post that's easily filled.
You have a problem, sir.
Not if you solve it for me, Chips.
Eh? How's that?
The governors would like you to carry on for the duration.
Oh, but I...
Oh, you're the best man for the job, Chips. Especially at a time like this, when morale is even more important than... Latin verbs. Will you take the post, Chips?
I will. If you won't appoint me officially.
Oh, but that seems rather odd, if I may say so. Most masters always dream of having a headship.
And so did I once, so did I. But only late in life does a man learn the things which are only helpful in his youth. You see, I don't want people to expect a lot from me. I'm like all these new colonels and majors you see everywhere. Just a wartime fluke. A ranker, that's all I am, really. But I'll do the best that an old man can.
Nickel.
1917. 1918.
Northington Primus.
Chips lived through it all.
Northington Tertius.
Out of vast experience had emerged a kindly, gentle confidence in himself.
Palmer.
To keep a sense of proportion. That was the main thing. And one day he got a letter from Switzerland, and on the following Sunday in chapel, after the names of old boys, he paused a moment. And then added,
"Those few of you who were here before the war will remember Max Stapel, the German master. He was in Germany visiting his home when war broke out. He was popular while he was here and made many friends. Those who knew him will be sorry to hear that he was killed last week on the Western Front."
"On the Western Front," Chip says.
"Yes.
Does that mean he was fighting for the Germans?"
"I suppose it does."
"Seems funny, didn't you read out his name with all the others? After all, he was an enemy."
"That's just one of Chip's ideas, I expect. The old boy still has them."
"Yes, he still had them. Those ideas of dignity and generosity that were becoming increasingly rare in a frantic world. And once on a night of full moonlight, the air raid, warning, was given while Chips was taking his lower fourth in Latin. The guns began almost instantly, and as there was plenty of shrapnel falling outside, it seemed to Chips that they might just as well stay where they were, on the ground floor of schoolhouse.
"It may possibly seem to you, Robertson, at this particular moment in the world's history, that the affairs of Caesar in Gaul some 2,000 years ago are of somewhat secondary importance, and that the irregular conjugation of the verb tollo is even less important still. But believe me, my dear Robertson, that is not rarely the case. You cannot judge the importance of things by the noise they make. Oh, dear me, no. Let us resume our work. If it is fate that we are soon to be interrupted, let us be found employing ourselves in something really appropriate. Is there anyone who will volunteer to construe?"
I will, sir."
"Very good, Maynard. Turn to page 40 and begin at the bottom line."
"Yes, sir." "Genus, hawk, erat, pugni. This was the kind of fight. Quo, si, germani, exer curiant, in which the Germans busied themselves."
"Oh, sir, that's good. That's really very funny indeed, sir. One of your very best."
"Well, you can see now that these dead languages can come to life again sometimes, eh?"
He was a legend, with his old and tattered gown, his walk that was just beginning to break into a stumble, his mild eyes peering over steel-rimmed spectacles, and his quaintly humorous sayings. Brookfield would not have had an atom of him different. And on November the 11th, 1918, Chips was Brookfield's symbol of victory. But before the day was ended, he had sent his resignation to the Board of Governors. The duration was over. And now, 15 years later, on a cold and foggy afternoon, he sat in his front parlor at Mrs. Wickett's. She was out, but she had left the tea things ready in case anyone called. On such a day, however, visitors were not likely. But no, someone was there. Chips answered the front door himself, which he shouldn't have done, and encountered a rather small boy wearing an expression of anxious timidity.
"Please, sir, does Mr. Chips live here?"
"Oh, you'd better come inside out of that fog."
"Yes, sir."
Come along. I am the person you want. Now, what can I do for you?
I was told you wanted me, sir. Oh, sir, perhaps the older boys were playing a trick on me.
A trick, eh?
They quite insisted that you wanted to see me, but I suppose they were just...
No, wait. Whether they knew it or not, they were quite right. Quite right, my boy. I want you to take tea with me. Sit down by the fire. It's all prepared.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I don't think I've ever seen your face before. How is that?
I've only just come out of the sanatorium, sir. I've been there since the beginning of term with measles.
Ah, that accounts for it. Here's your tea. Help yourself to a crumpet.
Thank you very much, sir.
What is your name, my boy?
Linford, sir, from Shropshire.
Linford. Any of your family here before you?
No, sir, I'm the first.
And how do you like Brookfield?
Well, sir, I haven't had time to see a very great deal of it. The measles, you know, sir.
Yes, the measles, to be sure. How much nicer if they had come just before your term finals, eh?
Yes, sir.
You know, Linford, you'll like Brookfield when you get used to it. Not such an awful place. No, you're a bit afraid of it, yes, eh?
Yes, sir.
So was I, my dear boy, so was I at first. That was a long time ago. 63 years ago, to be precise. When I first went into Big Hall and I saw all those boys, I tell you. Oh, scared. Indeed, I don't think I've ever been so scared in my life. Not even when the Germans bombed us during the war. But it didn't last long. The scared feeling, I mean. I soon made myself at home.
Were there a lot of other new boys that term, sir?
Well, oh, bless my soul, I wasn't a boy at all. I was a man. A young man of 22. And the next time you see a young man, a new master, taking his first prep in Big Hall, Linford, just think what it feels like.
But...
Yeah?
Well, if you were 22 then, sir...
Yeah?
You must be very old now, sir.
I'm certainly no chicken.
Oh, sir, I didn't mean...
Nothing to worry about, my boy. Have another crumpet.
Thank you, sir.
You know, Linford, you're growing up into a very cross sort of world. Maybe it will have got over some of its crossness by the time you're ready for it. Let's hope so, at any rate. For your sake. Well...
I'd better be going, sir.
Yes, well, I'm very happy to have met you, Linford.
It's been no end of a pleasure for me, sir. For a bit, I was afraid the boys were just playing a trick on me.
Oh, you did, eh? Well, now you can go and tell them they were quite right. That I most certainly wanted you for tea.
Oh, I shall certainly tell them, sir.
Well, goodbye, my boy.
Goodbye, and thank you again, sir. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
As he sat by the fire again, tears suddenly began to roll down his cheeks. An old man's failing. Silly, perhaps, but he couldn't help it. Over the fog-laden air came the bell for call-over. It was time to light up. But as soon as he began to move, he felt that he couldn't. He was too tired, and anyway, it didn't matter. He leaned back in his chair and thought he would just take a nap. When he awakened, he was in his bed.
What?
Well, you old ruffian. Feeling all right? That was a fine shock you gave us.
Why, I'm in my bed. What's happened?
Merely that you threw a faint. You're all right now. Take it easy.
And Cartwright here.
Just popped over to see how you were, old fellow.
Fall off to sleep again if you can. Just sleep.
Just sleep. Take it easy. Get some sleep. Give your best to Brookfield, and it will give you something in return.
But you'll never get down Great Gable with such a sprain.
Yes, you can, you liar. Oh, that's very good, sir.
Of course, I shall call you Chips, too.
It's April Fool's Day, sir. I'm afraid we got you, sir.
Well, goodbye, then. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Brookfield wouldn't be the same without you. We all know it. Auf Wiedersehen, Chips. Auf Wiedersehen.
Quo si Germani exer curiens, in which the Germans busy themselves.
Please, sir, does Mr. Chips live here?
Yes, he rarely seems to be resting quietly. Nothing wrong but age, I suppose. Nothing else. Poor old chap. Must have lived a lonely sort of life all by himself.
Not always by himself. He married, you know.
Pity he never had any children.
Well, what was that you were saying about me just now?
Oh, nothing at all, old chap. Nothing at all.
No, but I heard you. You were talking about me. Absolutely nothing, my dear fellow. Really, I give you my word. I thought I heard you. One of you. Say, it was a pity. A pity I never had any children, eh? But I have, you know. I have. Yes, I have. Thousands of them. Thousands of them. And all boys.
Jefferson.
Jennings.
Jolan.
Jupp.
Kingsley Primus.
Kingsley Secundus.
Kingsley Tertius.
Harper.
Hastert.
Hatfield.
Hatherley.
Bone.
Boston.
Bovey.
Bradford.
Bradley.
Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
You have been listening to Goodbye, Mr. Chips, an NBC University Theater production of the novel by James Hilton, starring Herbert Marshall. If you wish to expand your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC University Theater. For full information as to how you may enhance your knowledge through these home study courses, write to NBC University Theater. In care of the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky, the University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas. Next week, be with us again at the NBC University Theater for a dramatization of J.P. Marquand's best-selling novel, Point of No Return, starring Mr. Kent Smith. And the following week, a revival of the deeply moving How Green Was My Valley by Richard Llewellyn. Goodbye, Mr. Chips, was prepared for radio by Agnes Eckhart. Starred as Mr. Chips, Herbert Marshall, who currently can be seen in the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, The Secret Garden. Our cast included Ramsey Hill, narrator, John Ramsey Hill, Billy Hammond, Johnny McGovern, Guy Bellis, Crawford Kent, Henry Blair, Jerry Farber, Alma Lawton, Ben Wright, Donald Morrison, Norman Field, Dan O'Herlihy. Your announcer, Don Stanley. Our intermission commentator was Hugh J. Coleridge Mackernis, whose commentary was recorded. The original musical score was composed and conducted by Dr. Albert Harris. The director of the NBC University Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.